Hello, everybody. Welcome to After Hours with me, Rick Kogan. We're doing an experiment here. I have never had a formal co-host, but I decided that Peter Ferry, the great novelist of most recently Open Heart and previously Travel Writing, would be a suitable co-host. And I couldn't have asked for a better one because he brings in not a protege, Peter, but a former, former student of yours.
And a wonderful writer.
Elizabeth Diskin. I pride myself on reading every book of every author who comes on, but this thing sort of threw me for a loop, so I've only read the first four chapters of The Green Line, and Elizabeth, this has the potential to be a great, great book. What kind of teacher was Peter Ferry at Lake Forest High School?
Peter was a great teacher. It was a long time ago, but I remember very few of my teachers from high school.
I think that means I don't really remember.
He was good. I swear he was good. He got me interested in English, you know, which took me through undergrad and then law school, making me go back to, hey, maybe I'd like to write. Maybe, you know, this is where I'll find my niche. So I think that all stems back to
It's interesting in both of your cases, Peter. I know you've written for a long time, but it took you a long time, a la Norman MacLean, to write your first novel, which was Travel Writing. Did you always, I know you worked at a book publishing firm and did a lot of writing there, but the whole notion of writing novels are not easy to write. I don't care what James Patterson may have to say about it. They're not easy to write.
Oh, no, they're not. But I don't think I was ready to write one.
How do you mean?
Well, I was a late bloomer. I matured late, and I didn't have much to say. When I was in college, I worked with Walter Tevis, who wrote The Hustler.
Oh yeah,
and he was a great guy. And I did an independent writing project. I kind of twisted his arm to do it, and he once said to me, "You know, Pete, you haven't much to say, but you say it very well." And I think
that's inspiring.
Yeah. That was true for a long, long time in my life. I really hadn't much to say, and it took me a long time. Maybe I had to be 60 before I finally had a message.
Elizabeth, what about you? You had a career.
Well, I certainly didn't think of it early in life. I was not one of these kids who wrote in journals and constantly dreamed of being a novelist someday. I was a dancer as a child. I was always very creative. But I sort of stumbled my way through life into law school and into the legal profession. And the only thing I knew for sure once I got to that stage in life was I really love writing and I love the research. I just don't much love being a lawyer. So, you know, the fantasy of doing something more creative with those skills fueled me. And it felt like I'd be getting back to what really drives that side of my mind. Which
was there a specific catalyst for either or both of you, Peter, when you retired from teaching in Lake Forest? And it couldn't just be, I have like an empty afternoon, so I guess I'll start a novel. Was there something?
I was asked, I wrote it in the last 7 years of my career teaching. And the catalyst was they asked me to teach creative writing, which I'd never done before. Huh. And I thought, well, I was writing a lot of travel stuff for the Tribune.
Very much for the Tribune and other places,
But I hadn't been writing fiction. So one summer I said, okay, I'm going to write a story. And I wrote 20 pages of a story that turned out to be the first 20 pages of travel writing. And I thought, well, I kind of like this. If I like it next summer, I'll continue. But, you know, you can't go into a classroom and ask kids to write if you're not writing.
True.
That was the catalyst. That was the thing. And then in the course of that year, I figured out how this story was going to end. So the next summer, I wrote the last 80 pages. Then I took a sabbatical, which I was, you know, fortunate to do enough to be able to do because my wife is a lawyer, and a lot of people don't have that luxury. And you know, altogether it took about 7 years. But then I was on my way. But I think it was a matter of readiness. I was finally ready to write something.
Interesting. That's the same. That's exactly the way Norman MacLean felt. Norman MacLean of A River Runs Through It and a couple other works, who had a long career at the University of Chicago. Now, Elizabeth.
And he was a friend of yours?
A friend of my father's. Yeah. A friend of my father's and a great writer.
That's just one of the great books.
Yeah, it really is.
That's a great book.
It really is. But the last paragraph of that
the book last paragraph.
One of the most stunning paragraphs written in the English language. Yeah. Except for many paragraphs
is.
In your two books.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, Elizabeth, for you.
Well, you know, Elizabeth is if you've read four chapters, you know that she can turn
no question
a sentence.
No question.
She's a fine writer.
What no, I was struggled it for you? Like you. It also took
was
me
it like,
8 years to get that book.
It's like, man, am I sick of being a lawyer? I mean, what got you to sit down and start? It may not have started with the Green Line.
No, it started actually with started. I would write stories all the time, little vignettes here and there. I had not really figured out if I was ever going to write a full-length novel. But I did once get on the Green Line by accident in the middle of the
day. Going the wrong way.
And it's one of those moments where you look up and you suddenly realize I am clearly not going where I need to be going. And I didn't know the city the way some people do. I did not grow up in this area. I only know it by its reputation, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly.
Sure.
And so I felt nervous, and I thought, thank God it's noon. And I got off at a stop, and I came back, and I sort of fantasized, what if it was midnight, you know, and that sort of started it for me.
Wow, interesting.
But I wasn't sure what quite to do with that story as I sort of played with it until I started thinking about the civil forfeiture aspect. That was something I wrote about, studied about, and researched a lot while I was in law school. And it's very much in the news these days, but nobody knew anything about it 10 years ago when I started writing this book. And I loved the idea of a story that really not only entertained, but told us something that we don't know, you know, something that really made me
well, that's
so
that's a angry. Lot of the, I guess this falls under the genre of legal thriller.
Yeah.
And
loosely.
You
know, it's not a courtroom
No. Those are courtroom thrillers.
Right.
We'll continue on with my two co-hosts for the evening, Peter Ferry and Elizabeth Diskin, talking a lot about their novels, The Green Line, that's Elizabeth's, and her upcoming book, Broken Grace. Peter's two novels are travel writing and most recently, Old Heart. They will help me interview some folks from the Beverly Arts Center and this fascinating guy named Jeff Spitz, who's made a really chilling but also fun documentary called Food Patriots. So stay tuned. My pleasure to have Elizabeth Diskin and Peter Ferry in here. They're co-hosting the entire show so we can mention the titles of their books 150 times today. Elizabeth is The Green Line. Peter has two, Travel Writing and most recently Old Heart. Elizabeth was, I'm not going to say greatly influenced by Peter, but she's like the only high school teacher she remembers. So that's something
that's
for
something.
You. But you then, when you started, and talking about the writer's community here, you were in a writer's group in Oak Park where you live,
right. And
all of a sudden heard about Peter's book and thought, wow, this was my old teacher, and kind of
right. Reconnected.
Right.
I was doing a book club event in Barrington, and the women were very excited to meet me and said, you're the second author we've ever had come to our group. And I said, oh, really? Who else have you had? And they said, this man, Peter Ferry, he wrote travel writing. He was a teacher at Lake Forest High School. And I said, that was my teacher.
That is a serendipitous story, as I've heard in a long
time. I asked for his email, and I sent him an email and said, I'm sure you don't remember me, but I'm so excited to have found out about you and, you know, reintroduce myself. So it was fun.
And Peter's been kind of, I guess, I mean, you're in here, you've been kind of a guide to the Chicago literary scene, such as it is?
Well, yeah, he's helped me in many ways. And he read a draft of my second novel and gave me some great feedback. So I feel blessed to have reconnected. I think hopefully I've helped him a little bit with random tidbits of information.
Well,
he's
yeah,
helped me too.
You're much more savvy in terms of social media and so on. But I think the person who's, you know, I don't want this to become maudlin, but the person who's helped people in this room is you. And, you know, they're writers
it's
and musicians.
It's just a radio show, Peter. Don't go crazy.
Yeah,
just a radio show.
Okay. No, well, you've helped so many people.
And so is another one of your students, Dave Eggers. Eggers has helped.
Yes.
Well, he's helping young people across the country learn about words and literature, and even little Fiona Kogan has been an 826 participant.
Has she?
Yeah. What? When he was in your class, did you sense something different about him?
Well, yeah, but I do.
I mean, Lake Forest has some smart kids. And
oh, yeah. He was, by the way, a year ahead,
behind Elizabeth. Right.
I sensed it about him, but then I would sense that about two or three kids every year.
Really?
And most of those kids were talked into going to law school by their moms and dads.
Sure, sure.
And Dave just never was. I mean, he had a vision. He knew what he was going to do. And he just went out and did it. When he was 23 years old, he started Might Magazine, which became a rage on the West Coast. And he was enormously talented, but so were a lot of kids. He had a vision, and he still has it. I mean, he's just going strong.
When I wrote a story about Peter in connection with Ragdale, the writer's colony up in Lake Forest, and got a handwritten note from Dave Eggers.
Yeah.
It is a fabulous thing, but I'm like, do I really want to start getting letters that say, I've been reading you since junior high school? I thought, oh my God, am I that old? Dave Eggers has been reading me since junior high school. Peter, describe for me, please, The Green Line, Elizabeth's novel.
Well, it's she's described it in part.
Yes.
It's about a girl who makes a wrong stop on the Green Line going to Otoe Park. Stumbles into a situation where she witnesses a crime and then collaborates with a cop in eventually solving the crime. It's very character rich. The main character is named Abby Donovan.
Abby Donovan.
Yeah, good.
And wonderful character. And so I don't remember the cop's name.
That's nice that you say she's a wonderful character, too, because some people have said she drinks too much. And I thought, she kind of reminds me of myself in my 20s. So I'm sorry that you feel that way, but it was kind of funny. People love her, or, you know, they think she has issues.
I've gone through a few chapters and changed the glass of wine to a cup of tea.
Yes.
Yeah. Peter Oldhart, you can... and these are nice short names. You can Google these and buy them in many different places. Oldhart is the story of family. It's the story of lost love. It's the story of self-determination. It's the story of holding on to yourself. Is that too poetically put?
No, I hope not. It's a story about a guy whose children are trying to get him. He's 85. All his obligations have been taken care of. His children want him to go into a retirement home, and he doesn't want to. So he runs away from home.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a kind of a fantasy for octogenarians. And he goes back to the Netherlands, where he had been a soldier in World War II, to try to find the only woman he ever loved, quote unquote.
Quote unquote is right, yeah.
And, yeah.
And he does discover, well, he has... The great thing about him is he winds up, he's so self-sufficient. You know, he's not afraid of what happens to him when he gets to Europe.
Well, you know, there are two questions that he has to answer. The first what do I do with the rest of my life? And the second is, do I do something or do I do nothing?
Yeah.
And he decides, I'm not just going to wait around for Jeopardy to come on TV. You know, I'm going to do something. So he makes that decision. He has a heart condition. He knows his days are numbered, but he doesn't want to spend them, you know.
Well, there's a lot of research in your book, too, didn't you think, Elizabeth? Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to sort of learn what it was like to be a soldier in certain places in World War II. Was that enjoyable for you?
I loved it.
Yeah.
But the trick about research is you have to know it, but you can't tell it all. You don't have to tell it all. You have to know it so that your reader says, this guy knows what, has the confidence that you know what you're talking about, but you're not laying it all out there.
Right.
You know it, and then you back way off.
Sure, sure. And just give what you want to give or give what you think is necessary. Yeah. But if you don't know it all, it's really impossible to figure out what to give and not give. Have there been, and again, Elizabeth, I've read the first four or five chapters, and I can see cinematic qualities to these books. Have you guys gotten any movie nibbles off this?
Some nibbles when it first came out that were pretty fun. Nothing has come of it so far, and it's
That's obviously Hollywood, the
fantasy that remains for all of us when we write a novel. How great would that be? But
yeah, I sold travel writing to Castle Rock, to Rob Reiner at Castle Rock. An option.
Yeah, right.
Put my son through a year of college, and then he didn't make a movie.
Wow.
And this one is too new.
That's the way it goes.
One of the things I researched that meant a lot to me was Down syndrome, because the main character, Tom Johnson, has a child with Down syndrome. And I did it by meeting someone who has Down syndrome. His name is David Janitis. He is a bagger and a guy who collects carts at the jewel store in Plaza del Lago up in Wilmette. And I just every time I went in there, he was singing. He likes to sing Beatles songs as he collects carts. And so I got to know him by name. And then I talked to the manager of the store. I gave the manager a letter to his parents explaining what I was doing, that I was a writer and I was interested in. And so they called and said, we'd be delighted. And David's very
wonderful for them.
Unself-conscious about it. So we've become friends, I'm proud to say. And he came to my book signing and when we did our launch in Evanston, and he signed books.
How neat.
Yeah, it was fabulous. He's quite a guy. He's an Eagle Scout. He's in the Special Olympics. He's now 26 years old. He works at Walgreens. He works at Jewel. He's quite a guy.
That's part of the joy of the writer's life. After a short commercial break and the news, we will get to some of the struggles that are also part of the writer's life. Because, you know, you think it's easy writing a novel. Try selling a novel. Right. I mean, that combination is a 1-2 punch that I admire you both for standing and still standing up. So we'll get a couple commercials in, then we'll get some news, and then we'll be back with my two co-hosts, Peter Ferry and Elizabeth Diskin. My co-hosts for the entire show here on After Hours, Peter Ferry, author of two novels, Travel Writing and most recently Old Heart, and Elizabeth Diskin, otherwise known as E.C., the letters E.C., Diskin. Her current novel is The Green Line, and coming up in August, but you can buy it now, Broken Grace. We've been talking about some of the joys of being a novelist. You know, Peter, I was still stunned when you told me how long it took. Travel Writing is one of the great novels I've ever read. And all of a sudden I said, how long did it take? How was your contract? And blah, blah, blah. What happened with Open Heart? Why did it take so long?
Yeah, well, I got a note today from someone who'd read my book and liked it and has written a book and wanted to know, how do I get it published? And my heart just sank.
Of course.
Because it's just, I don't know.
Well, it's so hard. One of the things about the time you two decided to become novelists, the publishing business was basically up for grabs. The conventional way of, well, you're a very good writer. We'll give you an advance for this book because we think your next book might be a bestseller. Now it's all like, oh, who's the market? It's just so commercially driven.
Right.
Yeah, I'm afraid if it's not a blockbuster.
Yeah. But I don't think these idiots know what is a blockbuster or is not. I really don't.
Well, they're scrambling. Everyone is, it's a tough market for everyone who's in it.
Yeah.
Well, and there seem to be more of us than ever, because it is certainly easier to publish in the sense that you can physically create a work and put it out there.
Sure,
whether
there are
it's
a million
any good
websites.
Or you take your time and you really hone your craft as a different
You can make
story.
Something
but,
that looks
so
like
there
a
are
book.
Millions of people putting together things saying, can I? So, you know, getting the attention of legitimate agents or publishers or whatever is just as hard because there's so many things they're filing through to, you know, is there a gem in here? There's a lot of crap.
How did you find a publisher?
Well, it was kind of convoluted. I tried the traditional route first. Everything I had read was get an agent. Agent will get you a publisher. Getting the agent was going to be the big chore. And I read all sorts of advice on the internet and made myself sort of this plan. I will not give up on this journey unless I've written to 100 agents and they have all turned me
down.
Wow. Because I had read that Catherine Stockett, who wrote The Help, had been rejected by 60 agents before she found one. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, you can't just stop at 10, 20. You have to keep going. So that was my plan. At 24, I got a bite and the person wanted to see the second half and then called and had all sorts of excitement and said all those things you want to hear.
Yeah.
You know, just every little writer's dream. But it was 3 months later before she was ready to sign me. It was 9 months after that before she was ready to send it out. And there was a lot of back and forth. And then she sent things out and didn't get a bite and sort of felt done with me. And I thought, well, wait, what's next? What should we do? Let's try this angle. Let's do that. You know, I'd put way too much time and effort at this point to give up easily. And she said, you know, you may want to try and self-publish. And I thought, really? And so I sort of was left with.
You could have told me that a year ago.
Yeah. I thought, did I find a subpar agent, or is it the industry, or is it my novel's not good enough? I really didn't know where to go. So I continued to research, but I thought, I can't spend another year and a half and go through this all over again. So I created my own publishing house, essentially, and I hired a formatter, and I hired a cover designer, and I researched everything I could about what it takes to launch a book, and just kind of held my breath, and, you know, it was devastatingly terrifying, but I threw it out there and just hoped for the best, and, you know, you hear if things do well, maybe an indie gets picked up by a publisher who sees your numbers, and I thought, well, that will be great if I sell 100,000 copies or something, but I really didn't expect that to happen.
Yeah.
But 3 months after launching myself, I did get that kind of approach. And so it was, you know, kind of a dream come true. It all started to work.
It's a great story.
Yeah.
Which means
a publisher called you and said, we want to pick up your book.
Right.
Thomas and Mercer, which is the publishing arm of Amazon.
Right.
Last week's guest,
right.
Sean Chirkover.
So Chirkover. They had seen my numbers, obviously, because the 99% of my sales were through Amazon as an independent. I, you know, had it in my local bookstore and at book fairs, but otherwise, you know, Barnes & Noble is going to carry me. So they were watching my numbers, and they saw great reviews coming in and lots of sales and, you know, came after me.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
I, with travel writing, I got in just under the wire.
Yeah.
I worked on it for 7 years, in the last 2 years with an agent, and then he sold it in 10 days.
Wow.
And he sold it to Harcourt, and it was a six-figure advance, but that was 2006. That was on December 10th, 2006.
Right.
And, you know, that doesn't happen again. I mean, that doesn't happen anymore. But they had an option on my second book. My first book wasn't a blockbuster.
It should have been.
They had an option on the second one, and I sent it to the senior editor there named Jenna Johnson. She called. She said, I love it. We're going to do this book. Let's talk money next week. Next week came. There was no money. And my agent had said, they're not going to publish it. Harcourt is not in a good place financially. Mm. And they're not going to take a chance on you because you're not big enough. And then it took another year to find a publisher. And I found a boutique publisher. Or my agent did. My agent kept saying, be patient. This is a good book.
You know, you two are very mature people, and I'm sure you could take it if some publisher said, you know what, we don't think you're talented enough, but the whole notion that you're not big enough is disgusting to me. That's just disgusting. That commercializes what should be a more rarefied, a kinder business.
It should be, but it's happening in the music business. The arts are on the ropes, I think.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have in here, and you two are staying as my new co-hosts. This could work out great for everybody. We're having Heather Ireland Robinson, the executive director of the Beverly Arts Center, in to talk about that very thing. This is a great cultural institution on the South Side, and people don't always think of it. It's got a great theater. It does great programming. You're going to help me grill her. We don't grill people from the arts, but we'll talk to her. We'll be back after a short break. My co-host for the entire show, Peter Ferry, the author of two novels, Travel Writing and Open Heart, and Elizabeth, otherwise known as E.C. Diskin, D-I-S-K-A-N, talking about The Green Line, and she'll be back in August to talk about Broken Grace. So what you people should do is go out and buy both, read all four. Here's your summer reading list.
There you
That's
go.
All you need to
That's
know.
All you need.